All right, we're beginning here at the beginning of Masechet Gittin. Masechet Gittin is based on the pasuk that's found in Sefer Devarim, Parshat Ki Tetzei, Ki kach ish isha uvala, v'yayim lo timtzachen peinav, ki matzava irvat davar, if he's not happy with the woman that he chose, because he finds in her an irvat davar. We'll see later on, it'll take us a while to get there, in terms of what are the qualifications for divorce, v'katavla sefer kritut. And if he wants to then separate from the woman, he has to write for her a sefer kritut, v'natan biyada v'shulcha mi beito, v'yatza bi meito v'alcha v'ayta l'ish acher. So here you have the psukim that make up the halachot with regards to a get. Embedded in these psukim are numerous halachot. We'll start with a couple of them. They throughout the Masechta will bump into the halachot, but they really come out of these three psukim. The first of which is v'katav la sefer kritut. The only way to get divorced is through a sefer kritut, which means in writing. The only way, as opposed to getting married, where we have different methods of getting married or different ways to engage the woman. Over here, we only have one way out, and that is v'natan la sefer kritut, that you have to give a get. Now, it has to be a sefer, so it has to be written. Kritut is an important aspect of it, which is it has to be a sefer that is koret, that separates between them, and therefore they're in the get itself, it will state that this frees them or separates them from each other. But not only does it do that, but also koret. It completely severs the relationship between the man and the woman. If there's any residual relationship left, for instance, the husband leaves himself some residual rights, then it's not a sefer kritut, because it's not completely separate between them. And the get itself is primarily a document that affects the kritut, that actually causes the divorce to happen. Secondarily, it also acts as a document of raya, a document of evidence that such a divorce took place. The need for signatories on the get, Rabbi Meir believes, is essential because that's what makes it into a get kritut. And then Rabbi Lozer believes that edim misira karte, that when you hand over the document to the woman, the edim that witnessed that event, they are the ones who cause it to be a get kritut. The signatories on the get are just a way to have evidence of the fact that such an event took place. So the get functions actually primarily as a document that affects what the transaction that we're trying to do, but secondarily also acts as a contract or a raya, a proof to the fact that the divorce took place. In addition, it says here, v'katav law, that he has to write it for her, and v'katav, he must write it. From that we learn that it has to be done lishma, which is that it has to be written for the baal, the husband who wants to use it for the divorce, as well as for la, for her, the woman that he is divorcing. And that's why a get, as we're going to see today's daf, requires lishma, which means that it has to be written for this particular couple in order for them to divorce. If it was written just to practice or from someone else, it's no longer kasher to be used as a get. The get itself is comprised of two parts. One part is the toref, and the other part is the tofes. The word that's used in modern Hebrew today, tofes, is a document that you have to fill out or a form that you need to fill out. The difference between them is the toref has the key elements of the get in it. That means it has the name of the man, the name of the woman, the name of the city, the basic structure. The tofes is the standard language that is in every get. And so you'll see this in the Masechet that there will be differences with regards to the dinim of the toref, which is the key aspects of the get or the key parts of the get, and the tofes, which are the more form-like or standard-like parts of the get. And you can separate between them because the dinim might be different for the tofes than for the toref. And most of the dinim that are requirements of lishma refer to the toref, because that's where you write the names of the individuals and the parties that are involved, which are the key elements of the lishma that is there. In addition, it says, v'natan biyada, it has to be given into her hand. The only way for the divorce to be effective is v'natan. If the husband sends it, the husband has to give it, the woman can't take it. And in addition, has to reach her hand, biyada. That has to be in her hand. Her hand can literally mean her hand, or it can mean someone that she appoints on her behalf, or her chatzer, her property that acts like yada. But she has to accept the get. B'shilcha mi beito. And it also has to send her out of his house. And part of the language of the get is that there be a shluchin, there be a sending out of the woman, not that the husband removes himself, but rather a sending of the woman out of the house. That leads us to the general or basic halachot that are associated with a get. A get, based on the psukim here, can only be initiated by the man, because it says, v'natan biyada, that he will give it to her. A man can give a get against the will of the woman, as long as the woman accepts it, but you can cause the woman to accept it, either by having a shliach accepted it for her, or by having a chatzer accepted for her. But technically, min haTorah, a husband can divorce his wife, even though the wife is not interested in getting divorced. Rabbeinu Gershom or Agola made a takana that you're not allowed to divorce a woman against her will. And therefore, today, in order to get divorced, you have to have both parties be willing. The husband, because midoraita, he has to do it of his own volition. And based on the takana, the woman also has to be now a party to the get or a willing participant in the get. That's the only way to get an effective get today. One additional qualification is that it has to be vikat of law v'natan biyada, that he writes it and then hands it to her. That means that once you've written the get, the only thing that can be me'akev is the netina, the ability to give. If you have to do something else to qualify the get before you give it, then it's not a kosher get. So for instance, if you write in something that's mechubar lekarka and it would require you to sever the item before you gave it, that is not a kosher get because it's not v'katav v'natan. V'katav, then v'chatach, and then v'natan, and that doesn't work. That's another qualification to get. Now, the Mishnah here in Gittin begins assuming that you know what a get is, or you're assuming that you know what exactly is going on. Now, you could argue that's because of the psukim. The psukim tell you what it is, and in other mesechtot, like in Brachot, the Gemara says, oh, it's starting off with Kriyat Shema, Mishach B'chov Kumecha, in times of Kriyat Shema, how do you know what it's speaking about? I said, well, it's relying on the psukim. You know that the psukim say that you have to say b'shach b'chov kumecha. So now we're trying to define what is b'shach b'chov kumecha. Over here too, you could argue that it's relying on the psukim, which is b'katav la sefer kritut. But in the psukim, it already tells you that you have to give a get, and therefore the mesechta just dives in without giving you any introduction or explaining to you what it is. That is somewhat difficult because we do have Mishnayot that are found in Masechet Kiddushin that tell us the methodology for getting divorced and that a get is the method of divorce, the method of separation, and there it has details explaining how you sever relationships, including a relationship between a man and a woman, as well as a relationship between a master and a slave. But the severing of those relationships is explained in the Mishnayot in Kiddushin. For that reason, there is a lot of controversy as to the placement of Gittin within Nashim. Where does Gittin belong? We have already seen, when we discussed it with regards to Sota and Nazir and Nidarim, that many of the Rishonim believe that Gittin does not belong here, but rather either right after Ketubot, or if it's after Nidarim and Nazir before Sota, or it belongs after Kiddushin. The fact that now Gittin is found before Kiddushin is not the most likely of outcomes based on the different opinions as to where Gittin would fall out. The Rambam explaining why the Gittin is found here before Kiddushin, he says based on the Pasuk, which is V'yatza V'hayta, which the Gemara in Kiddushin learns from that, a Hekesh, that V'yatza V'hayta means the same way that you can divorce, you can marry, and that's how we know that you can marry through a shtar, because just like you divorce through a shtar. But the order of the Pasuk is V'yatza V'hayta, that she divorced, and then Vaita, and she marries someone else. But that order puts Gittin before Kiddushin. And therefore, Vayata, Vaita, gives you the defining factor for why Gittin precedes Kiddushin. Otherwise, the most likely reason is its connection to Masechet Ketubot. That Gittin is really an extension of Masechet Ketubot, and therefore, it would have followed Masechet Ketubot, if it were not for the need or necessity to put Nidarim, Nazir, and Sotah together because they follow the Mishnayot of Masechet Ketubot, and Nidarim has a whole perek in Masechet Ketubot. Nazir is a subset of Nidarim, and then Sotah connects to Nazir because in the Torah, they're juxtaposed in the Torah. So that caused us to insert all these other Masechetot, even though Gittin would have been the natural follow to Masechet Ketubot. That's most likely what pulls Gittin forward in front of Kiddushin, notwithstanding the fact that the way that generally the Masechtot are organized is by their size, and therefore the assumption being that Gittin is bigger than Kiddushin, so it would precede Kiddushin if there wasn't a reason otherwise to switch them around. In terms of the word get generically does not mean a bill of divorce. Get means a contract, and it is used that way in Shas. The word get means a contract, and Tosfot already raises that issue over here. Says Afagav to the Shar Shtarot Pamim Nami Kreri Get. Even though other contracts are sometimes called get, nevertheless, the Mishnah here uses the term get as if it means a bill of divorce. And that is because overwhelmingly, when you use the word get, it means a bill of divorce. That's the main way that it's used, the main meaning of the word get. And therefore, if there is no qualifier to the word get, we would assume that it means a get piturin, which means a bill of divorce. Again, if in context in other places the word get is used, then it makes sense that it's a shtar and not a bill of divorce, then that's what the word means. But because of its usage more often to describe a get piturin, a bill of divorce, it has become over time synonymous with a bill of divorce, and therefore we use the word get to describe a bill of divorce, and that's why the Mishnah will treat it, that the word get here is being used as a bill of divorce, not for a generic shtar. As to the origins of the word get, there are many, many different views as to where the word get comes from. Some of them more innovative than others, like the Kilat Yaakov suggests that the letters Gimel and Tav are never together in the Torah. They are never side by side. And since they're never side by side, the putting of those two letters together is indicative of a document that separates, that divides between people. And that's where the origins of the etymology of the word get comes from. Others look at it as being a derivative of the word gita in other languages, as well as other possibilities as to what described get is. What's interesting, given that the etymology of the word is somewhat uncertain, and the fact that the word get also means shtar, you can see here in the Tosfot he brings, whether it's from the Geonim, others quote in the name of the Rabbeinu Chananel, that the gematria of get is 12. And therefore there was a practice to write all gitin in Yudbet Shurot, in 12 rows based on that. Or the Sefer Kritut, the document of division or separation, the word Kritut is a sum total of all the divisions in the Torah. That means that between the Chumashim and the Torah, you leave a space of Arba Shurot, 4 rows between each Chumash, and the 4 rows between each Chumash is a division. It's a koret, it's a separation, and therefore they took the total of all of those separations within Chumash. Now technically there are 5 Chumashim, so there'd be 4 separations. 4 times 4 is 16. So how do you end up with 12? It's because you don't count the division between Bamidbar and Devarim, because Devarim is just a repeat of that which happened before. That's not an easy statement, and that's not necessarily true, but that's the way that they viewed this Mishneh Torah. And therefore they have 12 shitin. That's where the 12 rows come from. Both of them are very interesting ideas, especially for the fact that the word get, which has a much more generic reason, is being used here to describe specifically a bill of divorce. And from it, they are then making that it should be 12 rows. Again, these aren't ma'akev, but that was the minhag, that's the practice with regards to a get. The Masechta begins, again, with a perek that you would not have expected the Masechta to begin with. You would expect the Masechta to begin with the core items that need to be in a get, or core qualifications of a get. But here, our perek begins with seemingly a sidebar or issue that doesn't seem to be core to the issues of get, but that might have to do with the fact that many of the other aspects of get are dinim de oraita. Whereas what our Mishnah discusses are the din de rabbonon that was imposed on the get. And as many times we see in Shas and the Gemara discusses that, that the divrei de rabbonon are chavivin. When the chameim instituted something and they put something into place, they're chavivin, and therefore we give them precedence in the Mishnah, even though it would have been made more sense to discuss the core issues that are mid oraita in the get. And so this is an example of exactly that, that we're talking about an issue that is in some ways a sidebar, but because it's a din derabonon, it got precedence in the Masechet itself. Right, so now our Masechet begins, and maybe get, maybe Dinat Hayam. Tzarich Shiomar, Bifanai Nichtav, Ubifanai Nechtam. Someone who brings a get from overseas has to say that it was written and signed in front of me. So first of all, the word Medinat Hayam, it's not clear what the definition of Medinat Hayam is. You can see Rashi. Rashi says it's synonymous with Chutz Laretz. The Mishnah could have easily said Chutz Laretz. Instead it uses the term Medinat Hayam. The exception to that is Bavel. That Bavel will not have the status of Chutz Laretz with regards to a get. But otherwise, Medinat Hayam is synonymous with Chutz Laretz. That's the way that Rashi learns, as well as many of the Rishonim learn that that's the case. On the other hand, the Baalei HaTosafot over here bring an alternate view that Medinat Hayam is not synonymous with Chutz Laretz, but rather is indicative of places that are further away. Medinat Hayam, like it sounds like, are these are the nations off on the sea, means that it's further away. That not Chutz Laretz, as in anything outside the borders of Eretz Yisrael, but rather Medinat Hayam, things that are far away. That's where this halacha is applicable. That leaves an additional machloket as to what the status of the areas closer to Eretz Yisrael is. Do they then have a different status? Because they're not Medinat Hayam, they are Chutz Laretz. Or are they also subject to the same din as Medinat Hayam? The reason that they use Medinat Hayam and not Chutz Laretz is because of this problem of Bavel. The Bavel is not included in this din here. And so in order to leave Bavel out, they use the term Medinat Hayam that indicates further away lands rather than Chutz Laretz that would have included Bavel. So that's just to note here. The second thing is, it says that it's Hamevi. Someone who's bringing a get, which is a Shliach Lahava'a or a Shliach of the Baal. This person is acting as an agent of the husband to bring the get to his wife. Where he's bringing it to is obviously Eretz Yisrael because the Tana sits in Eretz Yisrael. So even though he never states it explicitly, the Tana, when he says, maybe get Medinat Hayam, he means Medinat Hayam to Eretz Yisrael. When that get is brought from overseas to Eretz Yisrael, the person who carries the get, when he comes to deliver the get to the woman, has to make this declaration of Bifanai Nichtav, Ubifanai Nechtam. The get was written in front of me and signed in front of me. The first thing the Gemara will ask is, why? And we'll see it's a machloka between Rabba and Rova as to why you have to make such a declaration. Rabban Gamliel Omer, Af Havi Minerekem Uminecheger. Even if you bring it from these two locations, you also have to say Bifanai Nechtav, Ubifanai Nechtam. Rashi over here identifies Rekem V'cheger as Targum Shel Ben Kadesh U'Ben Bared. That it's between these two locations of Kadesh and Bared. And those are places that are mentioned in the Chumash in Breishit with regards to the travels of Abraham. Tosafot over here says that's very hard to understand because in a minute, in the Mishnah, we're going to see that it defines the borders of Eretz Yisrael. And over there it says that Rekem is on the eastern side. And the way that Ben Kadesh and Ben Bored does not set them up in that way that Rekem would be on the eastern side. And for that reason, Tosafot thinks that the Ben Kadesh and Ben Bored is not the description here or the proper description of Rekem and Cheger, but rather these are locations that are, we'll see, on the border of Eretz Yisrael, or just outside of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they are problematic because they are in Chutz La'aretz, which again then colors this issue about whether the din here is Medinat Hayam or Chutz La'aretz. The way the Rav Gamliel seems to be defining is, it's Chutz La'aretz. These are cities that are on the edge or the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and yet they still require you to say, Bifanai Nechtav u'Bifanai Nechtam. Rav Elazar Omer, Afilu mikvar Ludim leLod. Even from the village of Ludim to Lod itself, you would also have to say this. As to why you have to do this, Tosafot of here gives two possibilities. So one is the possibility of the shared name. That even though it's called Kfar Ludim, because it's a suburb or very close to Lod, nevertheless, it does not get the status of Lod. That's one possibility as to what the Chiddush is here. Despite the fact that it's a suburb of Lod, it does not get the status of Lod, and you still have to say, Bufanai Nechtav, Bufanai Nechtam. That's one way Tosafot explains it. The Rabbeinu Meir, on the other hand, says that Rabbi Eliezer was from Lod. And so Rabbi Eliezer, in describing his situation, says, Aferilu mikfar Ludim, the Lod. Lod is where he is. And even from Kfar Ludim, which is right outside, to Lod itself, even though they're very close by, you still have to say, Bifanai nechtam, Bifanai nechtam. The Re rejects this understanding because of what we said before. The Tan of our Mishnah never tells you where you're bringing the get to, because it's obvious that you're bringing the get to Eretz Yisrael. That's why it says, the Tan is sitting in Eretz Yisrael. If the reason that Rabbi Eliezer used this example is because he was sitting in Lod, then he wouldn't have to say that. He could say, Afilo amevi mikfar Ludin. If you bring a Kfar Ludim, we'd know that Rabbi Eliezer is in Lod, and that would mean from Kfar Ludim to Lod. The fact that he mentions Lod must mean that there is some significance to it. Whether the significance is the fact that they share a common name, and therefore it would seemingly be that they are a single entity or a single city, and despite that, Rabbi Eliezer says they're not, or it has to do with their proximity, their physical proximity, that Kfar Ludim is adjacent to Lod, despite that fact, it does not have the status of Lod. But either way, it's an example of these very close areas, or areas that share a name that seemingly would indicate they're close. Nevertheless, you still have to, when you bring the get, say, b'fanai nechtav, b'fanai nechtam, when you go between these locations. The Medinat Hayam is the defining factor here, not these areas that are necessarily chutz la'aretz, or that are being given by the other Tanaim over here. Someone who carries a get, is transporting a get as an agent for the husband to the woman, and he's going between countries overseas. So here it's telling you not only in cases where you bring it to Eretz Yisrael, but even if you're transporting it between countries overseas, the same requirement applies, which is b'fanai nechtav, b'fanai nechtam has to be said when you give the get. Shimon Gamliel omer, afilu mehegmonia lehegmonia. Doesn't have to be from a country to a country, it simply has to be from one governorship to another governorship, as long as there is a hakpada, or some sort of problem of getting between one and the other, because the governors are at odds, or there's a border between them. If there is issues with easily getting access from one to the other, then they have the same din as Medina the Medina, and you would have to say, Bifanai nechtav, uvifanai nechtam. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, now Rabbi Yehuda here gives you the borders of Eretz Yisrael. Mimekem lemizrach, virekem kemizrach. When you want to know what's considered to be inside Eretz Yisrael and what's considered to be outside Eretz Yisrael, then Rekem is the eastern border, and Rekem itself has the status of being to the east. That means that it's already outside of Eretz Yisrael. Mi Ashkelon lidarom, v'Ashkelon kidarom. The southern border is Ashkelon, that's in the southwest, Ashkelon of Eretz Yisrael. That's the southern border, and Ashkelon itself is already outside the border. Mi Akol litzafon, Akko is the northernmost border, and Akko itself is kitzafon, it's like it's outside. Rabbi Meir Omer, Akko k'Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Meir disagrees and says that Akko is like Eretz Yisrael, the Gitin, as far as Gitin are concerned. Now, here it only gave you three directions. It gave you the northern border, the eastern border, and the southern border. It does not give you the western border. The reason it doesn't give you the western border is because the Yam, the ocean, Mediterranean Sea, is that western border, and therefore it's obvious where the western border of Eretz Yisrael is. It may not be so obvious because there are opinions that the western border of Eretz Yisrael includes any land masses that are in the Mediterranean that run a straight line between what would have been the northern border and southern border of Eretz Yisrael. Remember that Eretz Yisrael itself skews down to the southwest. That means if you drew a line from the north down to the southwest corner, it actually would go through the sea. And anything that's captured by that would be considered part of Eretz Yisrael. There's also an amazing shita of the Balei HaTosafot in other places that maybe to the west there is no border. And therefore anything to the west of Eretz Yisrael would be classified as Eretz Yisrael. Well, that would mean that areas within Europe would be considered a part of Eretz Yisrael if they were west of Eretz Yisrael, that there is no border to the west. Again, that's an unusual, unique opinion that obviously we do not subscribe to, but has very interesting ramifications in terms of what is considered to be Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, the Kaftar Beferach says that all these cities are on points that are the meeting of different directions. So for instance, Akko is in the northwest corner, Ashkelon is in the southwest corner, Rechem is in the northeast corner, and that would mean that the Mishnah is missing the southeastern corner. The reason for that is because that's Yam HaMelech. So similar to the other explanations that say that the western side is missing because the Mediterranean is there, this opinion says that the southeastern corner is missing because Yam HaMelech is there and it's obvious what the border is. Over here, Tosafot raises an issue that we find in other areas that some of these cities that are being mentioned here as being outside of Eretz Yisrael are deemed to be inside Eretz Yisrael. Like for instance, Akko, it was Nichbash V'yidei Olei Bavel, was conquered by those that returned from Bavel, and therefore has a status like Eretz Yisrael. Yet here in our Mishnah, it defines it as being Chutz La'aretz. So Tosafot says, how do we reconcile between what seemingly are these disparate comments about cities here that are deemed to be Chutz La'aretz, and we have other times where they're defined as being part of Eretz Yisrael. So Tosafot gives two possible answers. One is that the cities are divided. That these cities, half of them is in Eretz Yisrael, and the other half is in Chutz La'aretz, and therefore they have partially a status of Eretz Yisrael if you're on that side, or status like Chutz La'aretz if you're on the other side. And therefore, the disparity in descriptions have to do with depending on which part of that location that they were speaking about. Tosafot then gives another explanation, which is the definition of what Eretz Yisrael changes depending on the context in which you're speaking. If you're speaking about Kedushat Haaretz, there's one definition of what is considered the borders of Eretz Yisrael. When you're talking about Gittin, Gittin has a different definition. Gittin does not have to do with the Kedushat Haaretz, but rather has to do with where are the main civilization or settlements of people within Eretz Yisrael. Wherever you have a major settlement, then there were yeshivot and batei dinim, and therefore the halachot were well known and taken care of. So anything that's proximate to the main yeshuv, that's considered to be a part, quote-unquote, of Eretz Yisrael, versus other areas which are outlying cities or outlying villages. So even though technically they're within the borders of Eretz Yisrael, they don't have that status for Gittin because they are more isolated, or there is no yeshiva there, there's no batei dinim there, and therefore they lose their status of being in Eretz Yisrael for Gittin, but not totally. So that's the way Tosafot over here reconciles between the disparity here between some of these cities that are mentioned, like Akko, as being something that's outside of Eretz Yisrael here in our Mishnah, yet in the Sifrei. And in other places, Akko seems to be one of the cities conquered by Olei Bavel that would grant it Kedusha, and therefore be part of Eretz Yisrael, and that's how he reconciles. The difference being that, of course, in the time of Yoshua, when they came in to conquer the land, Yoshua conquered a much larger swath of land that would be deemed Eretz Yisrael, based on the argument of whether the Kedusha Rishona of Yoshua was permanent, or when they were exiled from the land, it lost its Kedusha. And that was reinstated when the Jews returned from Bavel, which is Kedusha Shnia, then the areas that would be defined as Eretz Yisrael would be different between what we call Olei Mitzrayim, those that came out of Mitzrayim or the conquest of Yeshua, versus Olei Bavel, those that came back in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, where they had a much smaller area of land, and it remains that way until the Chashmonaim take over. And even at the beginning of the Chashmonaim's rule, the areas of Eretz Yisrael are basically the borders described here in the Mishnah. After the killing of Shimon, the son of Matityahu, who was the first real ruler of the Chashmonaim, then his son, Yochanan, Hyrcanus, begins to expand the reach of the Chashmonaim even farther, which were then even enhanced by his son, Alexander Yanai. And then Eretz Yisrael starts to expand significantly until it reaches its high point under the Chashmonaim, and then with the Roman rule, the area of Yehuda is much larger. But that's a later phenomenon, but not something that happened when they first came back from Bavel. And so the areas that are Kadosh, based on when they came back from Bavel, it's a much smaller area, an area that's basically being delineated here by the Mishnah, which was around the center of the country and near Yerushalayim. Those were where the major settlements were. The Rambam, in defining Eretz Yisrael and these areas of Eretz Yisrael, gives cities or descriptions here, which are very hard to reconcile with this Mishnah, since the Rambam seems to quote our Mishnah as part of the borders in Hilchot Trumot, Perek Aleph, Halacha Zayin, that were in the time of Yoshua and not in the time of Olei Bavel. And so just to note that there is some sort of disparity between the Rambam and his definition of what the areas of Olei Bavel are versus what we see here in our Mishnah. Some of those discrepancies might be reconciled by when you make the determination of what's considered to be the conquest of Olei Bavel. Is it at the time that Ezra comes back? Or is it even at later times, like we see by the time of Yoshua, that even though the conquest was begun by Yoshua, it continues through Sefer Yoshua into Sefer Shoftim, and then even into the time of David. So what determines the point of Kedushat Haaretz? And that might influence or explain part of the Rambam's position. I may be get the Eretz Yisrael. Someone who brings a get within Eretz Yisrael. Eino tzarich shomar b'fanai nechtav u'b'fanai nechtam. So if you're transporting intra-Israel, you do not have to make that statement. V'im yesh alav urim. If there are questions as to the get, itkayim b'chotamav. Then it'll be upheld by its signatories. This is also a machloket, which we'll get to in the Masechet, as to how the get is actually qualified. There is a machloket between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Meir believes that a get is qualified or made into a get by the signatories to the get. That's part of the lishma that is required over here in the writing of the get, is that the edim sign on it, and edei chatima kortin. The signatories to the get are what cause it to give it its power of a get kritut, and therefore the signatories are essential to the get. And if you were to uphold the get, you need to uphold the signatories to it. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar, who argues on Rabbi Meir, believes that edim misire karte, that the edim to the act of the husband giving the get to the woman, that is what causes the get to be effective. You don't need signatories to the get. They're not essential to the get. Why do we have signatories to the get? Is because the get not only acts as what we call a get turim, but also acts as a get raya. And that is a question in general with regards to contracts or documents. Documents can have two functions. A document can be a document of evidence, meaning it evidences a transaction that happened. It itself is not the transaction, but evidences such a document. There's a kinyan. And now the document comes to evidence the fact that there was a kinyan or a transaction that took place. That's called a shtar raya. On the other hand, you can have shtarot who they themselves affect the kinyan. You can purchase property through a shtar. You can marry a woman through a shtar. You can divorce a woman through a shtar. That shtar then is not a shtar raya, but rather a shtar that affects whatever action that needs to be taken place here. And the get itself is primarily a document that affects the kritut, that actually causes the divorce to happen. Secondarily, it also acts as a document of raya, a document of evidence that such a divorce took place. The woman then can use the get to collect on her ketubah, or she can use the get to marry another individual because it shows that she is divorced. So the need for signatories on the get, Rabbi Meir believes, is essential because that's what makes it into a get kritut. And then Rabbi Lozer believes that edim misira karte, that when you hand over the document to the woman, the edim that witnessed that event, they are the ones who cause it to be a get kritut. The signatories on the get are just a way to have evidence of the fact that such an event took place, and then we can go then question, because edim misira, we don't know who they were. We don't know who those individuals were, so we get signatories on the get to have people we can go speak to ensure that the get actually took place. So the get functions actually primarily as a document that affects what the transaction that we're trying to do, but secondarily also acts as a contract or a raya, a proof to the fact that the divorce took place. So my time, what's the reason that you have to make such a declaration of bifanai nichtav u bifanai nechtam? Rabba Amar, Rabba over here says, because fishain bikiyim lishma, that they don't know the halachot that a get has to be done lishma. So in order to protect against that problem, the individual who delivers the get has to say, b'fanai nechtav u'b'fanai nechtam. By saying that, now we can question him. If it was written in front of him and signed in front of him, Now we can question him as to the validity of the get. He was there when they wrote it. Did they write it for these people in particular? Did they sign it for these people in particular, according to Rabbi Meir? We can then inquire as to the efficacy of the get, because we have someone who witnessed the making of the get and the signing of the get. So the purpose, according to Rabbah, of saying Bifanai Nichtav Ufanai Nichtam is because we have this chashash that outside of Eretz Yisrael they're not bekiyim in gittin. In order to then verify the get, we have this individual who says Bifanai Nichtav Ufanai Nichtam, which allows us to clarify the information that we have questions about. So Rashi says that they ask him whether it was done the Shema, whereas the Tosafot Reed says they actually add in that statement that the Shem Ishazo to the Bafanai Nechtav Vnei Nechtam to make it clear that it was done the Shema. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot believe that that is inherent or apparent from the statement. When you say Bafanai Nechtav Vnei Nechtam, it's as if you are saying that it was done the Shema. Not that we have to actually query him about that, or not that he has to explicitly state that fact. Tosafot does raise the issue that this is not the only thing that can be posel a get. There are many other items that can be posel a get. And if they're not bekiim in a get, then why don't we worry about these other items? With regards to the other Hilchot Gittin, the Tosafot says that they were experts in those. The Lishma was a drasha from the Pasuk that he says was not something that was well accepted or well understood by them. And the way that he terms it is, they don't think that that is ma'akev or that is a full-fledged drasha. And therefore, they aren't as makpid as they should be on the issues of lishma. And that's why lishma is the pivotal point. Despite that fact, he doesn't believe that you actually have to ask the person who brings it whether it was done the Shema, or you don't have to have him specifically state that it was done the Shema, because that's the assumption that a person who says, Bifanai Nechtam, Bifanai Nechtam, is that it was done the Shema. Though there are Rishonim that disagree with the Rabbeinu Tam, I believe that the question here is not just about the Shema, but it's a more general question about all the things that can be posel to get. And that's what's meant by Rashi over here when he says that they ask him questions. They ask about the Shema, and they also ask him other questions. I mean, they clarify all of the issues over here, and that there are other issues besides the Lishma issue that needs to be dealt with, and Lishma is just a code word for all issues of get, or all psulim of get. Although the Ramban supports Tosfot's contention that Lishma is the key issue over here, because other psulim are not psulim that are unique to a get. They're psulim that are true of almost all shtarot, and therefore, they are bekiyim in them. The other hand, Lishma is a particular din that is unique to get. And that's where we worry about the failure because of this unique property of Lishma. And that's what the emphasis here on the issue of Lishma is. Tosafot does question this issue of Lishma because the Gemara later on is going to say that if the Baal himself brings it, he doesn't have to say, Bifanai Nechtav Ufanai Nechtam. But why doesn't he have to say it? If the whole problem here is a problem of Lishma, then the Baal bringing it is no better off than him sending it through a shliach, where we'd also have to clarify whether it was done lishma or not lishma. The answer, Tosfot says, is that when the Baal himself brings it, there's no chance that he's going to be ma'ar on the get. He's not going to question the validity of the get. Where the issue really comes up is if it's sent by a shliach, and then the husband comes along and says, either I didn't send it, or the sofer didn't write it for us in particular, it was done, or it was a form that was already there, it was done lishma. So the husband can cast dispersions on the get itself, because he wasn't the party that brought it. But in a case where he is the party that brought it, then we don't worry about the fact that he's going to cast dispersions on the get. And that's why we don't worry about this issue of lishma when it comes to the husband himself bringing it, because, as we're going to say shortly, most people know the dinim of gitin, and most sofrim that are engaged in gittim know the dinim. So there we're not going to be choshesh for that minority case and the possibility that the husband would come and question the validity of the get here because the husband himself brought the get. And that's why we don't require b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam for the husband, even though the requirement of the shema is still necessary. On the other hand, Rav Amar l'fishein edim mitzurim l'kaimo. The reason that we do this is because the edim who signed the get overseas, they're not readily available to us if questions arise with regards to the get. If the get itself now has some aspersions cast about it, how would you then uphold the get? You'd need to get the signatories to the get to evidence the fact that this is a real get. Those signatories are found far away. We don't have access to them. So how do we overcome that problem of distance and access? We have the person who brings it say, "Bifanai nichtav u'bifanai nechtam." And therefore, we have an individual here who can uphold the get and say that I saw it being written, I saw it being signed, and the get is valid. And if questions arise about the get, he'll become basically the affirmation that the get was a kosher get. The obvious question here is, then why is one sufficient? Why don't you need two edim? If you're talking about edut, he is basically testifying to the fact that the get is a kosher get, then you should have to have two people making such a declaration, not one person making the declaration. The Gemara will ask that question shortly.
The Ravid over here poses a question as to why, if we believe the aid here for the Kashruta get to give us an affirmation of the Kashruta get as if he's two edim, then why don't we also believe him as if he is two edim to counter any ur when its validity is challenged by the Baal? Why don't we say also that the Eid Echad here is Neman Kishnaim, and the Baal has no right to question the validity of the get? So the Ravid says that we worry about the fact that the Baal will come and say anything that's contrary to what the Eid is saying, but rather say that he forged the get to start with, or the Eidim were psulim on the get. Tosafot, we'll see later on, does not think that that is a chashash. On the other hand, the Ramban answers in a different fashion, which is,
the Ramban notes over here, which is that the Chachamim cannot institute that an aid will be believed like two edim over a particular issue, but only in issues that are derabanan. If they institute the issue, then they can dictate that it can be done by one aid. But in general, one aid only has the ability to be megale milta, which is to clarify a safek or some sort of uncertainty that we have. But an aid can't become like two edim if the Torah does not empower them in that case. And that's why one aid over here will not be sufficient to tell us or upend the possibility that the husband will say that he never sent him. And if you had two aidim, it would work.
What are the nafkaminot between the sheet of Rabo and Rovo? So one is, Ike benayu, that you betray. Two people bring it. So in the case where two people bring it, then they are available to evidence the fact that the get is a good get. So then you don't need this b'fanai nechtam b'fanai nechtam, because we have two edim who are now available to us. And being available to us, we can then be mikayemet. That's the way Rashi suggests, that according to Rovo, therefore you would not need them to say b'fanai nechtam b'fanai nechtam. Suppose the Rabbo, who would still require you to say it because the issue of lishma is not an issue about edut, it's an issue about when it was written. And therefore we need that information about the writing of the get. Tosafot does not like Rashi's explanation that now that two edim brought it, now they're available for us to be mekayim to get. Says v'kashuv da'atu b'kipa talulahu. What exactly do you do with these edim? So these two edim bring it, and then what do? You tie them up, you lock them down. How do you know that these edim are going to stick around, that you can get them to evidence to get? Sheimuzumanim lekaimok shivol bal biyarer. The husband comes and says, "I didn't really give this get. It's not a kosher get." Where are you going to find these two edim? Just because two edim brought it doesn't mean that they're going to be readily available. And therefore, Tosafot gives an alternate explanation based on the Riva, Mefaresh Riva, Deljub Eitrei Vamresha Baal Shalcham. We have two edim coming and saying that the husband sent them. The Til Lo Mehem and Lomar Lo Shalachtim. Then the husband is no longer believed to say that I didn't send them. So if there's only one aid coming and saying bifanai nichtav ufanai nechtam, then if he doesn't say that magical wording, then it's one aid saying that the husband sent him to give over the document. The husband shows up and says, "No, I didn't." Then it's one versus one, and we have a problem with the get now, because we can't say it's valid because the husband's denying the validity. On the other hand, if you have two aidim bring it and say the husband sent us, that in and of itself, that two aidim brought it, is also testimony that they are shlichim, that they are emissaries, agents of the Baal, and therefore if the Baal shows up later on and says, "I didn't send them," we will not believe him unless he brings evidence to the contrary, because we have edim saying that he did appoint them shlichim, and it's two edim that are saying that. And so because of that, we don't worry about irur anymore on the get, and that's why Rova would not require you to say b'fanai nechtav b'fanechtam when there are two edim, because the husband doesn't really have a right to question the validity of the get anymore. And then Tosfot says that we don't worry about the fact that maybe he on purpose had pasul edim sign the get in order to make it pasul. The eino chashud chachshila. We don't have a chashad about the husband that he's going to intentionally cause his wife a problem by sending her a pasul get. And therefore, if we have shlichim who say he appointed us to bring a get, we assume that the get is kasher and that he wasn't playing games with the get. And therefore, that's as if there's an automatic upholding of the get, and the husband no longer has a right to question the validity of the get. Another nafkamina is inami mimidina limidina be'eretz Yisrael. It's being transported from different areas within Eretz Yisrael that do not have easy access to each other. And therefore, for Rova, it would be a problem because you don't have easy access to get the edim to come to verify the get. And therefore, you would require b'fanai nechtav u'b'fanai nechtam. On the other hand, for Rabba, that's not an issue, because for Rabba, it's an issue of lishma, and the areas of Eretz Yisrael had bate dinim and yeshivot and knew the whole laws of gitin, and therefore you don't have to be chusheish for the fact that it wasn't done lishma. The third nafkamina is inami b'otah medina b'medinat hayam. Other possibilities, if you're transporting it locally overseas. So for Rova, since there's easy access between the areas, then we don't have to be choshesh for the fact that the edim won't come to verify the get, because it's a local locale. And therefore it is not necessary to say b'fenei nechtam b'fenei nechtam. On the other hand, for Rabba, who says it's an issue of lishma, even transporting it from one overseas location to another overseas location would still require that, because, first of all, the location where he's coming from are not Bikim and Lishma, and possibly even the place that he's coming to are also not Bikim and Lishma, and therefore we need this B'fanai Nechtav B'fanai Nechtam in order to guarantee that the get was written properly and done Lishma. Again, in that case, Rabba would say that you need Lishma, but Rabba would say you don't need the B'fanai Nechtav B'fanai Nechtam because they are very easily accessed, or you can get access to the edim easily. Tosfot does point out that there are other nafkaminot between the shitot here. It's just that either some of them are already captured by cases in the Mishnah, or they're subsumed under the nafkaminot that we already brought. So there are other nuances or cases where there would be differences in their opinion, but they are in general captured by either cases that are already mentioned in the Mishnah, or the three nafkaminot that we already brought. Now the Gemara says, Udarabba, Damar Fishem Biki in Lishma, according to Rabbu says that they are not experts in Lishma, the Bayitre, then why don't we need two Edim over here? Mida the Havi Akol Idiot Shibitorah. Because it's no different than any other testimony in the Torah. By any other testimony of the Torah, you require two Edim. Over here, by a get, certainly you should require two Edim in order to uphold the get. Because not only is it a normal issue of the Torah, but it's also a davar erva, something to do with arayot. And we have learned already in the psukim, the gzeir shavam davar davar, al pi shnayim edim or shlosha edim yakum davar. And over here in the psukim, by the get kitut, it says, ki matzah bar ervat davar. That davar, we make a gzeir shavam, that just like by yakum davar, you require two or three edim, a minimum of two edim. So too, by Devar Erva, you would require a minimum of two edim. So the question is here, if this individual, through his statement of B'fanai Nechtav, B'fanai Nechtam, is basically upholding the get, and now going to make it as if it's an approved get, then how do you have one aid doing that when this is a Devar Erva? It's a matter of divorce, and a matter of divorce is an issue of Erva. It should require two edim. When it says it's not a problem, Eid Echad Ne'eman bi Isurim. When it comes to Isur, Eid Echad is believed. So when it says, Imr Darmin and Eid Echad Ne'eman bi Isurim, that's true that a single Eid is believed by Isurim, Kagon. That's when you have Chaticha, Safek Shel Chelev, Safek Shel Shuman. If you have a piece of meat or a piece of fat, and you don't know if it's Otzer fats, which are Chelev, or Mutter fats, which are Shuman, so there, the Loit Chazek Isura, where there's no chazaka as to what the status of this item is, then Eid Echad can come for us and clarify for us and say it's either Shuman or Chelev. In our case over here, did chazek isura, the Eshedish. Until this point in time, she was a married woman. That means that we already have a chazoka that the Isser is in place. Over there, avi davar shebe'erva, vein davar shebe'erva pachot mishnayim. Then it becomes a davar erva. Davar erva requires a minimum of two edim. Eid echan eman bisurim is not applicable in this case because eid echan eman bisurim does not function to take care of situations where the Isser is already itchazik. It's clear that the Isser is in place, and now you're trying to remove the Isser.
The truth is that you don't need this statement of Vavi Davar Shebe Erva, which requires two, because you require two here for a number of reasons. One is Itchazek Isura, or like other Ediot in the Torah, that require two Edim, then what does this issue of Erva add? So there are those like the Ramban who say it doesn't add anything. And truthfully, you don't need to be goresed here. It just adds an additional aspect to it, which is what we mentioned originally when we spoke about two edim. Others suggest that there would have been hava minot to say that nida has a din of devar erva, and therefore maybe eid echad should be neman. And the Gemara's answer is no, that nida is not devar erva, and devar erva is separate and requires two edim. Or there are deot that believe that even in the cases of itchazek isura, eid echad is neman. But over here, because it's a davar erva, then it's an issue that requires two edim, even if you believe that in case of itchazek isura, eid echad is neman. So there are rishonim who explain the need for it, while others still suggest that it's unnecessary, but just brings basically an extra level of questionnaire to the fact that you really need two edim in this instance. Now that's not exactly true. As Rashi notes over here, Tosafot also speaks about it, that eid echad neman bi isurim, there are two types of isurim where an eid echad is believed. The Torah believes, as Rashi notes over here, kol echad v'echad mi'Israel al afrashat shuma v'al ashchita v'al nikur agid v'al achelev, that an individual is believed in all of these items to tell us that the meat is kasher, to tell us that shumot and masrot were taken off of this item, or that this is chelev, or this is shuman, or that this animal was shechted. Eid echad is neman to tell us that information. All those examples are not exactly the same. Those aren't all examples where lo itchazek isura. For instance, shechita. There, the animal when it was alive was asur. Itchazek isura. Now I'm telling me that an eid echad can tell me that shechita happened. That means that he's removing something where there was a chazaka of isur. So as Rashi notes in the subsequent Rashi, umetevel ushchita lo gamrinan la kedamrin revimot ha'otam biyado l'taknan, because you have the ability to fix the situation or rectify the situation. Lefikach neaman la'id aleihem, therefore you're believed to testify about them. You can perform the shchita. You can change it from being isur to heter through shchita, and it's in your hands to do the shchita. Since it's within your purview to do the shchita, you are believed to tell us that you did the shchita. Same thing with afrashat trumot and masrot. So even though these are things that are itchazek isura because tevel is asur, nevertheless the eid echad is believed to tell us that he was mafrish trumot and masrot. Not because there's a safek here, but because he has the ability to do it himself. He can be mafrish the trumot and masrot. And since he can do it, therefore he is believed that he did it when he tells us that he did it. So those are the two areas where the eid echad is neman. One is an area where we have a safek isur. The eid echad can come and testify and be machria and tell us which is which. Or in cases where he has the ability to fix the situation or change the status of the item. So for instance, if it's hafashat shumot masrot, shchita, where it's in their hands. Tosafot over here already asks, is that really true? Because a woman is believed that the animal was shechted. Now, that's even though the woman herself doesn't have the ability to shecht it, because she doesn't know the halachot of shechita. So then why is she believed over there? It's biyadal taknan. It's within her hands to do the shechita. That's just not true. She doesn't have that ability, yet she's still believed. So Tosfot over here gives a very interesting answer. Oma shanochnu somchim al nashim b'shechita. Afo pi shein yodot halachot shechita. Even though they don't know the halachot, why do we believe them? Kevin she biyadal lumod b'shechot. She could learn. Since she has the capacity and the ability to learn, it's as if it's within her hands to do this shechita over here. Oh, lakshir achirim shishchatu la kibiyada dami. Or the fact that she can ask others to do the shechita makes it as if it's in within her abilities to do the shechita, even though she herself can't do it, but since she can appoint or ask someone to do it on her behalf, therefore she is believed by the shechita.
From this Rashi, it seems that he believes Erecha Neman Bisurim is dependent on Nemanut, Hemina HaTorah, and that the Erechad here is believed because he has Nemanut, and therefore it may be a lot more akin to the din of Erechad that we find in other instances, like an Erechad that's Mechayev Shvua, or an Erechad that can testify about Mitat HaBaal. On the other hand, Tosafot over here seems to believe that Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim is a different construct than we find in other places. And that is that the Eid Echad here is what we call the Varer Milta. He comes to clarify the status of an object. He is helping us to understand the status of an object. He is not believed in incriminating anyone, but once he's established the status of an object, then anybody who comes into contact or interacts with that object will be subject to the clarity that he brought to that object. But he doesn't have Ne'manut in the sense of Edut or Edechad that we find in other places. Just to be sure that even by the fact that Edechad is Ne'man to be Mechayev Shvua, or Edechad is Ne'man with regards to the Mitat HaBaal, there is a machloket in the Rishonim as how it works, as well as the Achronim. And even in those cases, it's not even so clear that it works Mitzam Ne'manut, but rather maybe because of hachra'a, it's a way to come to a psak halacha, or because it's a davar da'ate ligluye, it's something that's going to become apparent in the future, or it's testimony about a fact rather than an action that was taken by an individual. And so, even if you were to disagree with Tosafot and say that Eid Echad by Isurim is similar to the Eid Echad found in these other categories, you don't necessarily have to come to the conclusion that it's happening because of Ne'manut. It might have to do with the nature of Eid Echad in these other cases, which also have their own particular nuances or reasons for why Eid Echad is Ne'man, maybe not through the regular avenues or channels of Edut.
Tosafot over here then questions, what is the source for Eid Echad Ne'man Bisurim? How do we know that an Eid Echad is Ne'man Bisurim? We're saying here that the Torah believes individuals in all these cases. But how do you know that the Torah believes people in these cases? She says we learned that out from Nida. Because by Nida it says, V'safra la, that she will count for herself the Shiva Nikiim. The 7 days of Nikiim, she counts, and she counts herself the woman. So that means that we believe the woman to execute on the counting of the days of Tara. And it says, V'safra la, she counts. She doesn't have to go to Beit Din. She doesn't have to have someone else do the count. She herself does the count. So you see there that Eid Echad Ne'man B'Isurim, this woman is believed with regards to Isur. Now what's interesting about that is, Nido is a case of Itchazek Isura. It's a case where the woman is Tmeah, she had a sighting of Nida, and now she's waiting to become Tahor. So why in the V'Safra La is she believed if it's Itchazek Isura? Or, if that is the source, then even in cases of Itchazek Isura, Eid Echad should be Ne'man. So Tosafot says that Nida is not really a case of Itchazek Isura, because Nida cycles. And since she cycles, it's only logical or should be anticipated that she will have sightings and then stop having sightings. So therefore, even though she's Itchazek as a Nida because she's Tmeah, but nevertheless, the fact that she stops having sightings and that she can have days of Tara, that already makes it it's not Itchazek Isura. And that's why we only say that Erechad is Ne'man Bisurim when it's Lo Itchazek Isura. Now, what about the case of Get over here? Our case of Get over here also seemingly is a case of Itchazek Isura, because we know that a Get requires two signatories to it. So that shows you that it's something that is Itchazek Isura Veshadish. And now with an Eid Echad, you're trying to now overcome what normally would be required from two Eidim. How can you even suggest that the solution to our problem over here is Eid Echad Ne'man Bisurim if the get doesn't function in that way? Why should the Eid Echad be Ne'man over here? So the Rabbeinu Tam suggests over here, the Eid Echad Ne'man Bisurim ke'agavna she'ikar get nasekvar. Since the ikar of the get was already done, v'shuvein zarich ala gilui milta le'dayim lishma nichtav. The get itself has signatories to it. The get itself was already done. So since it was done already, that is not at question now. The only question we have is, was it done lishma? Since the question is done lishma, that's a giloi milta as to whether the get, when it was done properly. That a single aid can be Eid Echad Ne'man Bisurim. So that's why the possibility of an Eid Echad being successful here is at least raised by the Gemara, it's rejected because it's a Dorei Sheba'erva that would require two Eidim. And by requiring two Eidim, then Eid Echad is not believed in that instance. Those are the little nuances of Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim that is brought up by Tosafot over here. Then the Gemara says, Rov Bikiyim Hein. The truth is that the majority of people are experts at Lishma, Vafilu Rabbi Meir Dechayish Lemiyuta. And even though we have Rabbi Meir's Shita throughout Shas, where he's Choshesh even for a minority opinion, Stam Safre Dedanine Migmar Gmire. Most scribes of the Dayanim who write on behalf of the Beit Din and would be the ones who drew up a bill of divorce, they also know the dinim of get, and they know that it has to be done lishma. So the majority of people know that it has to be lishma, and the majority of people engaged in gitin also know that it has to be lishma. That means that in terms of a miyuta, it's a miyuta de miyut. It's a minority of a minority where we have to worry about it. And even Rabbi Meir himself, who worries about minorities, wouldn't worry about such a far-fetched case. So then, why do you have to say b'fanai nichtav u'fanai nechtam if we don't worry about lishma? Because the majority of people are fine. Rabbanan hu d'atzruch. This is a rabbinic imposition. Ha'cha mishum iguna ikilu barabbanan. So the Rabbanan instituted that you have to say b'fanai nichtav u'fanai nechtam in order to deal with those minority of cases where there is a problem. So that's why they instituted it. But when they instituted it, they didn't make it like full-fledged edut that you require two edim, but simply that you only require one ed to say b'fanai nichtav u'fanai nechtam, because mishum iguna. We don't want to leave women tied up or anchored to their husband, and therefore we have a dispensation to use one ed here instead of two edim. So what the Gemara does here in the position of Rabbah is explain why one ed is sufficient. The first is, they dropped it from a din d'oraita to a din d'rabbanan. So once you drop it from a din d'oraita to a din d'rabbanan already, you can see that there'd be kulot. But generally, even when you have a din d'rabbanan, it's patterned after the din d'oraita. And if at a d'oraita level we require two edim, we would require the same by a rabbinic level. Here enters the other aspect, which is mishum iguna hakilu bei rabbanan. The rabbanan who instituted this necessity for saying b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam, they also, when they put this into effect, didn't want to make it into a burden where it would actually prevent the woman from getting remarried or getting her divorce. And therefore, they said a single aid is sufficient in this case, even though normally in cases like this, we would require two aidim, even midir abanan. Here, we are makio because of the din of aguna. Rashi claims then that the chashash here is that this individual found a get lying on the floor that had his name and his wife's name in it. And that's what we are trying to prevent through this institution of the Chachamim. Tosafot thinks that that's a far-fetched case. And therefore says what we're trying to prevent here is the Baal coming along and saying that the get was actually a practice get that was written by the Sofer to practice. And it doesn't qualify as a real get. So even though it was written with his name and her name in it, it was just done as a practice and it wasn't done lishma. And that's what the Chachamim are trying to prevent over here by this institution of b'fanai nechtav u'b'fanai nechtam. So Gemara says, "Hai kulahu, chumrahu." This is really a kula. This turns out to be a chumra. D'matzrich le'trei. If you require two edim to say b'fanai nechtav u'b'fanai nechtam, lo ati baal me'arer u'pasile. Then the baal won't have the ability to come and undermine the get. Achad ati baal u'me'arer. If you only have one aid coming and saying b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam, then the husband can come and cast dispersions on the get, upasule, and then he'll ruin the get and cause problems with that. So aren't you better off instituting that it be two aidim, because once you've done that, the get has full force and the husband can't come and question it, versus if you use one aid, when then you open it up to this possibility that the husband will come and undermine the get. So Tosfot over here suggests that the Baal's right then is only a problem of laws, of making rumors, but it can really be posel the get, similar to what Rashi is describing over here, but then he says, ein nira l'ri. The ri does not think that that's the correct explanation. Shei pasul mishum laz ba'alma, came into kimlan shu kasher. And therefore, b'nira l'frei shu pasul le'hainu shiaminu l'laz of a milkom kom a get kasher. That we would have believed the laz, but because of this institution, that gives the get a much stronger power.
And we only really worry about the husband casting aspersions on the get which might prevent others from marrying this woman or bring up questions as to her children from the next marriage. That is what's meant here, Da'ati Balu Me'arer, not literally that he'll be pasale the way that Rashi thinks, that he could really upend the get, but simply that he could cause difficulties for this woman.
It says, Kevin Damar Mar, Bifnei Kama Not Nola. In front of how many people does the Shliach give this get to the woman? Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina, it's Machloke, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina, Chadamar Bifnei Bet, have to do it in front of two, Chadamar Bifnei Gimel. And one of them says that you do it in front of three. Mikara Midak Daik, Loate Lorui Nafshe. Therefore, the Shliach who's bringing it will be very careful, and then being very careful, he will not want to be undermined or questioned in terms of his integrity and the authenticity of the get. So what it says here is that when the guy brings the get and gives it to the woman, he doesn't just simply say to the woman, "Bifanai nechtabu, fanai nechtam," but rather he has to give that evidence in front of either it's a beit din if you require three, or in front of other edim if you require two. That beit din that he does in front of, or the two edim that he does in front of him, will question him. And he knows they're going to question him. And since they're going to question him, he's going to be very careful that when he says it, he really means it, and he knows what happened, and he has all the information in hand. And therefore, the chances that the Baal will come and question it are very low. That's one way to interpret it, which is, as Rashi says over here, Hashliach shemekablo miyad ha-Baal, yudea bo shebetzon megarsha, lo yavo v'yarer org. There's no way that the husband's going to come and question this get, because the Shliach has too much information, and it's clear from the Shliach's information that the husband did it. And the husband wanted this done, therefore he's not going to come and undermine it. So it's a presumption, assuming that this Shliach, this messenger, knows so much information and is going to be tested on that information. Therefore, he makes sure that the get was done properly, that the overwhelming likelihood is that the husband won't come and question it. That's one way Rashi explains it. The second one says is, Inami orer enu ne'aman, devadai ka memilta shapir. He says, maybe the truth is that the husband has no rights now to be orer anymore. Because the individual comes and says, b'fanai nechtam, b'fanai nechtam, he hands over this get in front of either two or three, and they're going to question him. It becomes as if he becomes a super aid, and as if he's given the qualifications of two edim, and therefore the husband has no right to question it anymore. That's the second way that Rashi brings it. And that's what the Tosfot read over here actually agrees with Rashi's explanation. He says, "Fikach itkinu shiyazem mekaimo bomro b'fanai nechtam b'fanai nechtam." We don't listen to him. So the Tosafot read agrees with Rashi's second explanation that the Baal no longer has a right to question it anymore. Okay, we're going to stop here, seven lines down on the top of Gimel and Aleph, and we'll continue with the discussion of Rava's opinion tomorrow, where the same questions will arise within Rava's opinion as we just brought up within the position of Rabbah.